It is a Thursday. It's time to talk to the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit. I would guess that Brian would be a little bit more excited if the Jayhawks were still alive in the tournament, but nonetheless, he's always a trooper and joins us after wins or losses to talk KU athletics. Brian, how are you doing this morning?
Doing well, Wade. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
I'm doing good. I was sick on Saturday. I've recovered from that. Some of that stuff's been going around. I know you battled that earlier in the year as well. So it's nice when you can recuperate and regain your health. And sometimes we take all of that for granted. And speaking of taking something for granted, I think a lot of people take for granted, you know, the success that Kansas has had in the NCAA tournament over the years and the success they've had in the Big 12. And then you have a year like this, which, you know, honestly, it seems really bad for KU fans. My goodness, we lost second round of the tournament. We didn't win the Big 12. We didn't win the Big 12 tournament. We were a four seed. And then I can think of many programs in America, including one to the north, Nebraska, that just fired their head coach, and they would love to make the tournament and get to the round of 32 because they've never won a tournament game. It kind of puts things in perspective, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, it's just crazy when you think about being a top four seed for the last 19 years. None of your kids have been alive when Kansas has not been a four seed, which means you're one of the best 16 teams in the country at the time of Selection Sunday. It means that, you know, the Sweet 16 is, you know, within reach. Kansas has been to the Sweet 16 31 times. Auburn, that just beat the Jayhawks, had only actually ever been to the tournament, period, 10 times. So we're so spoiled and we're so fortunate to get to watch a program that's just a model of consistency. I mean, 30 consecutive tournament appearances, obviously an NCAA record. I'm 38, and I vaguely remember, you know, 1989 and the Hawks not getting to be a part of it. But other than that, I mean, in my lifetime, you just all you know is Kansas being in March Madness, and we take it for granted. Whereas at other schools, even the Blue Blood schools, you have years where you barely make it in as an eight seed, or you don't make it in at all, or you're Kentucky a few years back and you lose in the first round of the NIT. Kansas just always seemingly is there, and so as much as we wanted more this season when you start the year preseason number one, I think given the fact that they lost so much in terms of personnel, you have to feel pretty fortunate that we got to enjoy the ride that we did and had a 14th consecutive 25-win season at KU.
You know, when we get to the tournament and so many people get caught up in the seeding, they get caught up on where the games are going to be played, but those that have a little bit more experience or delve into a little bit deeper know that it's more about the matchup. And, you know, I think we looked at this bracket, we talked about it before, that, okay, the first round matchup maybe is not ideal for Kansas, but hey, they blew out Northeastern, that worked out great, although that game was maybe closer than you think because, you know, halftime it was somewhat tight. It was tight early in the second half, and then KU blew them out. And then, of course, there are people worried about Auburn, saying this was going to be a tough matchup because of the way they play, and it really played out that way. I heard Coach Self say, you know, I can say it now, but when we saw the bracket, we've had problems against teams that are really fast and get up and down and like to shoot the three, and that's exactly what Auburn does. And it really comes down to that, doesn't it, sometimes? And we've seen it with Kansas before in the tournament where you get some decent matchups, you might make a run, and then you might get against a team that just simply gets hot, like a Northern Iowa that one year in the second round, or VCU who just got hot throughout the entire tournament. And it's just really more about who you play, not where you're seated or where you play.
Yeah, I think that's well said, and he certainly was wary of what Auburn might pose in terms of athleticism differential, depth, experience, all of that. I caught him in a candid moment on Thursday. Actually, it was, it would have been Wednesday before the press conference to preview Northeastern, and I asked him, I said, hey, do you have any preference on who you play should you advance? And I realize it's a 12 and a 5, and most folks would say, well, yeah, we'd much rather have 12. But keep in mind, this 12 had just won 30 games, was a really trendy upset pick, and it played within 3 points of KU without arguably their best shooter when the two met up in Kansas City, talking about New Mexico State. And off the record, off the air, and now putting it on the record, on the air, he's like, oh, definitely would rather play New Mexico State. And I think it's because of what you just alluded to. He knew on Selection Sunday, Auburn is a bad matchup for us. They have 13 upperclassmen. They have a point guard as fast or faster than Devon Dotson, and they're the type of team that just gets off so many threes. And we saw Kansas time and time again this year, no matter what they did to try to defend the perimeter, a lot of teams would have their best game against KU from distance, and the Jayhawks just don't have the firepower to compete with that. Kansas this season was a slasher-driver type team that could hit the occasional three, but was not what we'd seen the previous 2 years when they set school records for single-season three-pointers made. And so he knew going in that either would be tough, but the matchup that was just built to give Kansas fits even more so than the other was clearly Auburn. And so as soon as we watched that first game come unraveled in the last minute, New Mexico State versus Auburn, I'm thinking in the back of my mind, wow, maybe we'd prefer New Mexico State to complete this comeback. And ifs and buts, candy and nuts, right? But yeah, if New Mexico State hits all three free throws, or even two of the three free throws with 1.1 seconds left, you get overtime at least, all three would have won it. And I'm pretty confident, even with the Queen kid that we didn't face in December, who was just lights out red hot on Thursday versus Auburn, pretty confident KU wins that matchup, and we're talking about Kansas versus Carolina in the Sweet 16, had the Jayhawks been able to face the Aggies for a second time. So just funny how all that works out. I mean, that was the game that Auburn kind of had to get out of its system to survive in advance. Brown in that game was just 2 of 8 from 3, mm-hmm. and he comes out 7 of 8 versus KU out of the gates. I mean, it's just truly, as you said, who you play, when you play him, catching him at the wrong time, that kind of thing. And Brown looked like he was Klay Thompson or Steph Curry versus Kansas. You know, looked like Brian Haney versus New Mexico State. So it was truly a bad day to catch a team that had a lot of the ingredients you didn't want to face in a one-and-done setting.
And that's the thing about the one-and-done setting. It can be a cruel, cruel sport because you think about so many things. You know, I was talking with Riley Gates the other day. He's on with us every Tuesday to talk K-State. And, you know, there's the injury angle, of course. You know, Dean Wade not being able to play in the tournament this year, only played 8 minutes last year. Barry Brown getting in foul trouble, had to sit most of the first half, and he had one of his worst games of the year at the worst possible time. You know, Devontae Graham a couple years ago, I think, was 0-for-10 from three, or he had a rough game in the Elite Eight in Kansas City against Oregon. You can think back to VCU, KU shot 2-for-21 from three. And you can look at all these games, and people always remember the losses more than the wins typically. And that's how coaches are too. Fans typically are that way. Broadcasters at times are that way too. And you just say, man, that's just so cruel. And then you can have, like you just said, Bryce Brown. I've seen him play. I've seen Auburn play quite a bit this year. And every time I watched, he was very inconsistent shooting the rock. He was very streaky. And there you have it. First game, struggles to shoot. Kansas, he can't miss anything. And who knows? You know, tomorrow Auburn and Kansas could play again, and he could miss all his threes. Fletcher McGee, one of the greatest three-point shooters in NCAA history, went 0-for-12 from three against Kentucky for Wofford, and they still almost won. I mean, I bet you that kid's never been 0-for-12 from three in any game in his life and never will be again. But in the biggest game of his career or for the school against Kentucky, he's probably sitting there going, if I just go 2 out of 12, we win. He's got to feel horrible. It's just a cruel, cruel thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, no doubt. That's a great point of reference with McGee, another team Kansas played and beat this year. But, yeah, I completely agree with that. And for KU, you know, I think that there have been games in our illustrious history where we've caught fire at the right time, mm-hmm. and it's benefited us. But this was a year where things just had to go perfect. You had to have Quinton and Ochai come alive at the perfect time if you were going to advance to the next round. And, you know, no matter how much fight we saw to start that second half, and KU opened 7-for-7, and really loved and respected that they would come out like gangbusters and really try to attack it. Auburn at the same time was 5-for-5, and they weren't losing any ground. When we look down at the 16-minute mark at the media timeout, and you're thinking, wow, we just truly hit them with our best shot ever to come out and start a half, and we've only trimmed 1 point off the 26-point halftime deficit. And so it was truly just one of those nights where you caught them at the wrong time, and Kansas will learn from it and hopefully be able to, you know, put themselves in a better position next season where you don't have to play that game until a round further. Usually, as a one seed, 8 times in the last 12 years, you're not playing the 4 or the 5 until you get to the Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully for Kansas, it's a year that involves playing from out in front and winning another league title, starting up a new streak, and heading into Selection Sunday with a much more favorable draw. And I think this can be a preseason top 5 team. I really do. maybe we'll talk about some of the guys that could or couldn't come back. But if things break the way we think they will with certain guys, and you have your full freshman nucleus coming back on top of some talented sophomore junior players, I think this Kansas team has a chance to absolutely, you know, be a national elite type team in the preseason again, especially if you add a piece or two in recruiting that's still sitting out there, or get positive news on the Silvio DeSosa appeal. So you take your losses and you recognize that you ran into a team that just absolutely was in fuego the night you played them, and they may go from the in fuego status to the deep freeze versus Carolina tomorrow. Who knows? But you understand that sometimes that happens in college basketball. But we were young. We went about as far as we were going to go. Maybe one round farther would have been where you and I would have projected they land. But I think next season you set that bar much higher and you expect to get back to the Kansas basketball that we all know and love, which is winning the Big 12, being a one or a two seed, and playing at least 2 weekends in March Madness.
You need a little bit of luck to move on in a tournament. We certainly saw that in 08 with Kansas winning the championship. You need to catch some breaks against Memphis. You also think about, you know, a tough draw with Auburn and would have preferred New Mexico State, but you also look back to, you know, in Omaha, the Elite Eight against Duke, and Grayson Allen's shot is all but in, and Kansas, instead, it isn't in, and they go to overtime. Kansas wins. A year later, Central Florida has a similar type of roll on the rim, and it doesn't go down, and it's heartbreak. So you go from Duke losing in a situation like that last year, not on that play, but, you know, went to overtime, Kansas wins. It's amazing to me how hard everybody works, the players, the coaches, everybody pulls for so much, and then it can be the simplest of things, the razor-thin line between success and failure when it comes to NCAA tournament. And I always use the example of Michigan last year. They were beat in the second round in Wichita. They were done. Houston missed a couple free throws. They threw up a 35-footer. They make it. They go on to the national championship. Now, that's what gets coaches contract extensions. I mean, it's just flat-out amazing to me how it all works out. And that's what it makes it makes it madness. That's why we call it madness. So let's get to what you said. What about next year? I've heard various rumors out there. Don't know whether or not they're true, if there's any legs to them, that Udoka will probably go pro. I've heard that one. Diedrich, I think he could go either way. I don't know if he's going to go pro or not. I've heard that Grimes is going to test the waters. Some people are saying if Grimes is going to go, you're better off going now than waiting next year, because there'll be a more talented pool of players that will come out for the draft, and the possibility of coming straight from high school and off to go to college and all that stuff, which factors in. You mentioned Silvio DeSosa. I know they're still waiting on the appeal from whether he can play next year. There's a lot of moving parts for this team between now and next year, isn't there?
Yeah, probably more so than any year I can remember, because you have the NCAA appeal on top of early entry guys, one of which only played 9 games this year. And to me, I think with Udoka and Diedrich, these are guys that if they elect to go pro and they're thinking rationally, then they really must be okay with the fact that they're going to have to play in the G League or possibly go overseas. Mm-hmm. Diedrich, I think, could get drafted. I've seen him in the mid-second round or late second round. But athletically, as we saw throughout the year against B-plus caliber college players, guys were driving around him, shooting over him. I think he'll struggle on a nightly basis from a physicality standpoint and athleticism standpoint to compete in the NBA right now. And that may never change. You can only improve your vertical leap or your straight-on speed so much. But perhaps that's the logic why you come out. What more do you have to prove after 22 double-doubles, 700 points and all that? I, for one, have always felt like, and I see this all the time with guys that leave early and then it doesn't work out, and they wish they could have one more year of the celebrated status of being a star on the Kansas campus and having a chance to do something special and being in the limelight. They miss it instantaneously, because it's just not the same when you're driving around on a bus in the G League or you're playing overseas and nobody knows how to even look up your box scores anymore, and you have to put out tweets or Instagram posts to feel the love again because people aren't watching you on a nightly basis. You guys regret it and they miss it. And I'm not saying that's going to be the case with Udoka or Diedrich, but let's look at it rationally here. Udoka did not show well enough at the combine last year to stay in the draft. There were things he needed to work on and prove that he could add to his game or smooth out within his game. have more of an offensive skill set than just being a 4 feet and in type guy, being more than just a catcher, dunker type guy, being able to hit free throws at 60% or better, being more of a shot blocker, that kind of thing. And bless his heart, he only got a 9-game sample size to try to prove that. Exactly 25% of the season is all he got before the wrist injury. And so he didn't get to prove any of that. And I don't think we saw any of that at all in the 9 games that he played.
Yep.
And to me, if the splint, the cast doesn't come off until 10 days or 2 weeks before the draft, it's really hard imagining him being a first-round pick. And honestly, it's hard imagining him being a second-round pick. I don't see him anywhere in the top 60 when you look at some of these pre-draft projections. And so if he's truly, to speak to the rumor you heard, really hell-bent on going pro, then that means that he's got to rationalize it and be okay with the fact that he might not be a pro in the NBA.
Yep.
And some of these guys are okay with that. As Greg Gurley and I have talked, for some of these guys, going to making $150,000 in Turkey is great. It's better than coming back and not getting paid at all to play another collegiate season. But when you're a guy like Diederich, who would come back and potentially be the Big 12 player of the year, which would put his name in Allen Fieldhouse's rafters for all of time, and have a chance to go on a Final Four run, which would put his special place in the Kansas lore, vaulted way, way higher than just a one-and-done guy that had some nice double-doubles, but that was it. I think you got to consider that, because I'll tell you what, Wayne, you're dealing with these guys when they come back in the summertime for the Round Ball Classic, my pediatric cancer charity game. Every guy to a man will tell me, man, if I could go back and have one more year or one more month even, these were the best 4 years of my life, or in some cases, this was the best singular year of my life. You miss it almost instantaneously. And I know it doesn't come with getting paid like playing Euro ball would, but man, when you're riding around on that bus and you're not in the league, you're not, flying around in the private jets and all that, you're living the other side of pro basketball's lifestyle, I think suddenly the green pastures of Kansas look greener. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not saying that's the fate or fortune for those two, but none of these guys we're talking about, Grimes, Lawson, or Udoka, have anywhere close to a first-round grade as we sit today. That could change at the pre-draft camps. You never know. And I'll remind folks, it only takes one team to be enamored with you to make the draft process work. You don't have to have a consensus from all 30 teams. But this is not a year where any of those guys have anything close to a first-round projection. And so they better be prepared for a longer, more challenging road to making it to the association and for the reality that maybe their pro ball comes in a different type of professional league if that's really something they have to do. But I get it, man. And they've got all these guys in their ears telling them, not from a Kansas perspective, but family, supposed advisors, hey, man, if you wait a year longer, that just hurts your chances even more. I don't buy that one bit with you, though. I mean, he came here a year and a half younger than most incoming freshmen. It's not like he's got some kind of biological clock where he's 22, 23, and he's got to get the heck out of here. Kid's barely 21, about to potentially have a fourth season, but he's only played really one season and then a handful of games in the other two seasons. Mm-hmm. I think the number is somewhere just north of 50 total games played for him. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot still to prove for Udoka, so it's going to be interesting, and I hope that doesn't sound negative in any regard. I want it to sound realistic.
Yeah, sure.
For these guys, I love these guys. I want what's best for them and their livelihood and their lives. But to me, all of them, I think it would behoove them to take a deep breath, set back for a couple of days, and truly try to figure out, where am I at? But the best way to figure out where you're at is to go through the combine and pre-draft process. And so I encourage all of them, to take that few days to go up there and get an assessment of where you're at. But then be prepared, if the news isn't what you want to hear, to possibly consider coming back. It's not the worst thing in the world. Honestly, you ask every Jayhawk that's come through here, most would tell you it's the best thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Brown Haney, his appearance on the Sports Ticket every Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. And I thought you put that very well, talking about the different perspectives for you. Got to remember, these kids are 18, 19, 20, 21 years of age, and they've got their whole life in front of them. And so I think the fan base and just fans in general, and I'm not saying every fan's this way, I think even broadcasters, sports talk show hosts can forget this stuff too. I listen to sports talk in bigger cities at times, and I'm like, I don't think they have a grasp on what's reality in the real world either. Because, you know, when you're in your 30s or your 40s, you're just sitting there going, well, come on, man, you just leave. I mean, you go play pro. You can play Europe. You can make a whole bunch of money. I mean, why would you turn down and lose a year of earning potential and come back to school when it didn't work out your first year at the school or this or that? And then there's the flip side. You hear people say, oh, man, that kid's crazy for going pro. He isn't even that good at Kansas or at college. And then I'm like, I have to remind people, it's not, you're thinking NBA. As you so well put it, there are so many professional options out there. You can go to Turkey. I mean, look at Tyshawn Taylor's in Italy. Keith Langford, I believe, playing in Greece. We know Tyrell Reed went overseas and played. Lots. I think Perry Ellis is overseas or was at one point. There's lots of Jacob Pullen of K-State's been overseas. These guys have made some good bank, good money, and still getting to play the game that they love. But whether or not they want to be in those countries, that's what they have to decide for themselves. But it seems like to me there's so much of a misperception out there because we're not these kids' ages. And we don't have all the pressure that they have, as you said, with people in their ear going, come on, you need to get a, you got to get a contract somewhere and pay for a house. Mama wants a new house. Mama wants a new car. Daddy wants this. Instead of worrying about what's best for you as an individual.
Yeah, that's so much. And, I mean, you even got guys that now have personal assistants that they met while they were on campus in college in, like, a business finance class. And the guy convinces them to be their quasi-agent slash marketing pro slash whatever. And they're sticking their hand out. I mean, there's so many people that are pushing ideas. And that's where I love it that Bill Self will never stand in the way of any player having a chance to make a profitable future at the professional level, but at the same time, he'll give you the type of straight-up advice where he doesn't pull any punches and says, hey, this is what my friends are telling me in the league, this is what I think, and he wants guys to have a chance to go pro if it's the best thing for them, because honestly, that reflects favorably on Kansas. If guys come to Kansas and they end up not going as high professionally, that can be used against you in terms of negative recruiting, so he's all for helping guys go pro if it's the best time and the best decision for them. But I just know this, as much as that they want to make the folks around them happy and start that earning potential right away when they have the first chance to do it, a lot of these guys, honestly, their self-worth is found in the form of the affirmation, the fanfare, the praise, the Twitter followers, the relevance in terms of fame that they receive. And when all of a sudden you disappear into the abyss that is the, you know, international basketball scene,
yeah,
and you don't have everybody following you, liking you, patting you on the back, all that stuff, I think sometimes the remorse does kick in. And yeah, if you're in a good league where they pay you on time and all that, that can be a really profitable future, but they never receive the hoopla and the fanfare and the accolades and all of that, the attaboys that they were getting at Kansas, and almost instantaneously miss it. And so as much as you want to have that extra year to earn something, think about the difference. And again, I'm talking about Diedrich here, for his legacy. And when he's a grandpa one day telling his grandson about what it was like to play at Kansas, think about the difference between a guy like, say, Devontae Graham, who stayed all 4 years. He's going to wind up having his number up in the rafters, wind up being able to talk about hanging a 15th Final Four banner, as opposed to what if he would have come out after his junior season when he had that 1-for-7 performance versus Oregon you were talking about and never had any of that. I mean, it's just night and day different. Yeah. on your fondest years, your biggest impact, ultimately how you're remembered and celebrated. And make no mistake, how you're celebrated is almost as important to these guys as how much green they can wave around. And I think that, you know, a lot of them find out the hard way when they don't make it to the NBA, just what a far cry it is from the fanfare they received at Kansas. They miss it dearly because it truly was, as Frank Mason has said, the best 4 years of their life.
Yeah, well put, well put. All right, the football spring game coming up on April 13th. We'll talk about that more down the line. Off-the-wall question for you. We're getting into the month of April. In the month of April, well, certainly we talk baseball, Major League Baseball starting their season today, Royals in action. But there's also another big thing that happens in April for younger people, and that's prom, Brian. Prom is a big thing for young people. For me, when I was in school, prom wasn't that big a deal to me, but for the girls in our school, it was everything. So, Brian Haney, I know it's only been a few years since you were in high school and going to proms, and I'm sure you, all the girls were fawning over you, and you got invited and went to every single prom, you know, in Shawnee County, wherever else it might have been, and across the state of Kansas. What, in your opinion, is the best and worst thing about prom?
Wow, what a great question. Man, I have to think back. My high school just celebrated the 20th high school reunion last fall. So it's been more than a few, more than a minute, as Noah would say.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the best thing is that, you know, if you went out with like a group of friends for the dinner portion of the evening, I remember that being a lot of fun. We went to like a Japanese steakhouse, uh-huh, and you get all your best buddies and their dates, and you're like out having a fancy meal, which is way fancier than the typical going on a date in high school type thing.
Yeah.
And that was kind of fun. You know, if you happen to like your date and you had a chance to get a kiss at the end of the night or something, that was kind of fun. But the worst thing was probably just, you know, all of the pressure on who do you ask, and
mm-hmm,
got to get the corsage and the boutonniere and the fancy suit and all that stuff. There's way more that went into it than the Sadie Hawkins dance,
mm-hmm,
or homecoming or anything like that. I mean, it was a big deal. But I remember some anxiety over, okay, well, who am I going to ask? Who's a definite yes? Who am I, you know, swinging for the fences, and I might get rejected and I might be crushed to my soul? And then you kind of like hedge your bets on, okay, this seems like a safer option. I'm probably not going to get turned down.
Yeah.
But I still took the swing for the fence option, and I can tell you my junior year, I got a no. My senior year, I got a yes. But, yeah, that's probably the toughest part, is making that phone call. Nowadays, kids text or they FaceTime or whatever. Uh-huh. They have like creative ways of asking their date out or whatever, with a sign or something. Back then, you had to pick up the phone, you had to cold call them, and man, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, it's ringing. Is she going to pick up? Okay, she's on the phone. Oh my gosh, my throat's dry. How do I speak this and sound articulate? Oh my gosh, I'm nervous. My hands are sweating. You know, that was tough. So that to me might be even more so than all the work that went into it. The hardest part was making sure you got that yes from the girl you want.
Yeah, you know, how you explain that made me just kind of anxious and now going back, flashing back. I'm getting these sweaty palms because, yeah, it was that way.
Right.
You're like, what if she says no? You know, what if she says no? Or what if she says it in a mean way? And I always had a friend of mine said, what's the worst thing she's going to do? Punch you or slap you, right? Or kick you where it really hurts. I'm like, well, no, man, it's the emotional downside of, actually the physical part might be okay, but she slapped you. It was the, she says no, or if you're going to ask, you got to make sure you ask somehow privately, because you didn't want to do it in front of people and then be embarrassed if she said no.
Yeah, and even if you do it privately, she's going to tell people you asked.
Well, that's true.
All of a sudden, you're like that athletic department that gets turned down by three coaches the job,
yes,
and they're asking the fourth coach, and he knows he wasn't the first option, and suddenly he's not looking that attractive. That's the worst part, man. When it starts getting around, he already got turned down. The next girl knows she wasn't the first to ask.
Yeah,
man, that's pressure. And that's why you got to have the girlfriend ahead of time,
uh-huh,
you know, and then it's easy. But I don't know about you, but I didn't have the girlfriend ahead of time. I had to stick my neck out there, and that wasn't easy.
I was that way too. Yep. Now, those are good great memories that we just shared there from way back in the day. Hey, man, I appreciate the time. We'll figure out the schedule here in the next few weeks as to what we want to do and what works in your schedule. I know the spring game, like we said, coming up April 13th, there's a lot of excitement around the football program and what Les Miles is planning for the spring game, and it should be a lot of fun, and it's a new era in KU football. So we'll turn the page and focus on that. How's that sound?
Looking forward to it, buddy. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you having me on. And, again, thanks to everybody at Anderson Insurance Agency. We'll talk to you either next week or the week after. I think we can definitely do one leading up to the spring game and one after, because there is certainly a buzz going on. And I know you're a big fan of Rick Ross's music. Coach Miles let it slip the other night that he may be performing. So it's going to be a fun night on April the 13th, and let's definitely give it some coverage.
You know it, man. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, bud. See you.
That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Mellon Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701.